Welcome to the CineScare Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Speak.
And I am also one of your hosts, Joe Jans.
And with us, as always, is the superfan, Mr. Mark Piscati.
Hello, everybody, and happy birthday, John Carpenter.
Oh, it's John Carpenter's birthday. Interesting.
Yeah, today. Not Friday, but it is today.
Not too shabby.
Sean Connery there.
I did not know that.
Well, happy birthday, Mr. Carpenter. I had the pleasure of seeing him at Halloween 45 this fall talking about his classic movie Halloween. So how old did you say he was?
I don't know how old he is. He's got to be in his 80s, right?
38.
Yeah, I don't know how old. Let me do a quick Google. And it should tell me.
Beep a boop a boop a boop. Click, 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 click.
movie computer 76. Movie computer sounds. Joe's a big fan of movie computer sounds.
Yeah, that's what I do during the day, all day long. Make movie computer sounds with my mouth.
That sounded vaguely dirty. I'm not sure why. But. Well, Joe.
Matt.
With that segue. Mark, with that segue.
Hi, Joe.
Did you Matt. Watch anything this last couple of weeks that
I did.
You could talk about? Yeah, what did you watch?
I did. I watched three brand new movies to 2024.
Ooh.
Three. Well, it's only like the 16th, and I watched three.
How did you watch three already? That's crazy.
Okay, so I watched what most people watched, which was Destroy All Neighbors, which just came out on Shudder.
Okay, I haven't watched that yet.
I will say it's really campy. It's not my style. The people that kind of like that over the top, almost Evil Dead 2-ish. Like, it makes Evil Dead 2 look like a serious film. It's that funny and campy. Not my style, but at least it was done well. And I'm also not a fan of prog rock, so I guess that would have helped. So the second thing that I watched that I had to rent, and actually I ended up, I hated Amazon when they do this. There's a new movie that came out called Laced, L-A-C-E-D. And it is in an unprecedented snowstorm, it's a wife plans to kill her abusive husband, but her plans begin to unravel. It was for rent for like $6.99, and to buy it was $9.99, so I bought the damn thing. Excuse me. I did like it quite a bit. It's my number two movie of the year already out of three. But this was quite good. Like I said, this woman's got an abusive relationship with her husband. He comes home and there's a couple of really good twists and turns in this. The gore is not very, there's not a lot of gore in this one, but the one good practical effect that they do have in there was quite believable. I did like this one. I think you guys should watch it.
What's it called again?
Laced.
Laced.
L-A-C-E-D. And not to give too much away, but laced as in I laced his food with something. Make it easier to remember. Okay, this other one, it's debatable, I guess, whether or not it's a 2024 film or not. Because when I look it up on IMDb, it says 2021. But then on the release date, it's like December 30th of 2023. But it only hit streaming this past week. And it's a South Korean horror film called The Human Trap, which is my number one film of the year so far. And you guys need to watch this. There are at least three different twists of this plot. The gore is phenomenal. The synopsis is a group of young friends from the city go on a camping getaway. They're camping in the winter too, by the way. and what starts off as a fun in the woods adventure soon turns into a bloody nightmare as a madman and eventually his suave henchmen stalk them like prey. This was fantastic. And again, South Korean, you got to watch it in subtitles. And you guys both really need to watch this. I like this one quite a bit.
What's that on?
That was again another Amazon rental. Sorry. The Human Trap. And I know it's got another name it's under, but I was able to find it under The Human Trap. Although just if it says 2021, don't worry about it. That's the one you're looking for. I think the rental, if you do like a standard definition, it's like $2.99.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can do that.
Look at that. I've almost got my top 10 list of the year done.
Yeah. No kidding. Joking. Skate through the rest of them.
I'm a third of the way there.
Yep.
Yeah. So that was it. I watched other. Go ahead.
You've already watched as many movies as Mark will between now and next November.
Like April, yeah, at least.
That's not true. I watched already 2024. I have watched Maverick this year. Yeah. I will admit. I will admit.
Jesus.
Hey, and they're making a Maverick 3, Top Gun 3. It's in the works. Yeah, maybe. But I'm nervous about it because it's too. They've already have made two perfect films. I don't want them to mess it up. You know, I just maybe just leave it alone. But, you know, it made billions.
I heard that Maverick 3 or Top Gun 3 is going to be like Halloween 3, where it's got nothing to do with the original.
Yeah.
It's about like a guy in an ice cream truck or something. I don't know. Yeah. It was really weird. Yeah. Tom Cruise isn't even in this one.
Yes, he is. And Miles Teller and that Glenn Powell guy. So I'm excited Goose about it.
They bring a goose back.
Oh, wouldn't Zombie that be goose? Great?
Yeah, Zombie it was goose. All a dream. He's not really dead.
Just Anthony Edwards showing up like a force ghost and, you know, giving a thumbs up.
An Iceman, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, I watched a couple other, you know, my normal Bob's Burgers and Moonlighting, but nothing of note, just those three films, so... What did
and
you guys
who do you,
watch?
Who do you hate on Moonlighting? Who do you hate with the passion?
Mark fucking Harmon. That guy rode that show to hell. Mm-hmm. He got in the way of David getting with Maddie, and I will never enjoy Mark Harmon's presence in anything. I can't watch Summer School. He's on like 80 different CSI films or shows. I won't watch him.
Oh, he was good. I like Summer School. I haven't watched that
in a Summer
long
School
time.
Was great. Yeah, I haven't seen that in 20 years.
Nope. He ruined it for me.
Yeah. What about the Presidio? Presidio? Is that what you call it with Sean Connery?
Never saw
it. Yeah.
It was good.
It was all right.
Yeah, Meg Ryan's hot.
Mark, what did you watch recently?
Well, with Catherine Horan's suggestion, I watched Destroy All Neighbors also. I'm in the same boat with Joe. It wasn't my cup of tea. That prog rock stuff. The jokes didn't land. Alex Winter is in like a full body prosthetics, and his name's Vlad, and the lead character William accidentally kills him, and then like chaos consumes. I thought for some reason I thought it was like a Broken Lizard film. It kind of seemed like it, but the jokes did not land. Yeah, well, the jokes didn't land with me. I thought Alex Winter's character was completely obnoxious. It didn't land with me. I know Catherine liked it, but hey, to each its own. You know, it's gotten some good reviews, I think, but yeah, it wasn't my cup of tea. It was kind of annoying in a way. It was, and there was like special effects and like these groovy special effects, like, you know, you're on acid. I don't know. It didn't work for me. So because I listened to our last episode of our top 10, Matt mentioned Skinamarink, and he convinced me with his review to rewatch it. And I rewatched it. And you know what? I kind of see what Matt's talking about. I enjoyed it a little more. Not entirely, but I did enjoy it. And I started to appreciate really what, you know, this director was going for. So kudos to you for me, you know, liking this film even more and just appreciating. So it's always good to take a second look at it. I don't think I'll ever rewatch it again, but... I did rewatch it just because of Matt's review.
Nice.
Yeah.
Joe, why not? I think Joe is about to say something smart alecky just now. What was it?
No, not a word.
Okay.
No.
Just a look. Not it was a, just your look.
I've learned to keep it to myself.
When did you learn that? Like a minute ago?
Like 5 minutes ago. I just gave up.
That's funny.
Well, I did watch the Toolbox Murders, the 1978 film, mm-hmm. because Matt pulled a mark and yep. Danielle and was watching this
the
film.
Wrong version. Yeah.
He watched the wrong version.
Well, I didn't think that Toby Hooper would be doing the remake. I figured he did the original. It sounds like an old Toby Hooper movie or something, but yeah. And I didn't really pay attention, so.
But Matt, how did you find out that you were watching the wrong movie?
Well, by texting you guys that there's a scene where this one of the girls. I mean, there's wall to wall nudity basically from what I saw on it, like nonstop from the beginning. It's just this guy going. I think at a certain point it became. I think other people involved, but the first, how many minutes? First 15 minutes maybe of it were just this guy going from apartment to apartment, yeah. killing these women, and they're all half naked. But one of the scenes, this woman gets into the bathtub and she's naked and is basically pleasuring herself in the bathtub. And my son and his girlfriend come walking in the room right then. Now they're old enough to see that stuff. They're like 19 years old, but
Don't turn the light on.
But I'm sitting there watching this and I'm like, sorry guys, I have to watch this for a podcast I'm in. And they're like,
your
yeah,
quotes
right.
podcast yeah. sure did. Yeah, nice podcast. Yeah.
I don't know, the room, it was like, you know, it was at that moment when the darkness had just come, you know, so I hadn't turned on the lights yet. I'm sitting there in a darkened room and Rez and his girlfriend come walking in. I'm like, for God's sake.
Zach getting so itchy.
Yeah. Your stepdad's a little weird.
Yeah. What's he watching? Yeah.
What's he doing?
Like, I'm sorry. So then I texted that to these guys that what just happened, and they're like, I don't remember that scene being in that movie. Are you watching the right one? Mark was like, are you watching the original? And I said, there's more than one of these. So yeah, I realized I was watching the wrong one.
I think I was, point. I don't, Mark, and you'd, I know I had just seen the one we were supposed to watch.
Yeah.
And I felt ripped off because I didn't think there's like no nudity at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was no women in a bathtub masturbating in the new version. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I hadn't seen that either. I'm like,
did I miss something? Was I not paying attention? Yeah. So,
but it made it made me watch the film because a couple of texts before.
Because of all the nudity. I had to watch it.
Well, the couple of texts before, like Matt's going, this is a weird thing.
My sock drawer will never be the same.
Don't look at me. Don't look at me.
I don't get the sock. What do you mean?
Let's move on.
Let's move on.
I don't get the sock. But I watched it. I kind of enjoyed the film for how bad it was, though. Actually, Matt, the nudity actually stops abruptly. There's not
16
any...
minutes in.
Yeah. Yeah. No, honestly, I don't think there's any nudity after that scene. Huh.
Interesting.
But there's like 10 to 15 minutes of the Toolbox Murderer with the kidnapped girl where she's tied up in the bed and he's trying to act like her dad and all that kind of stuff. And it just gets weird, but it goes on for like 15 minutes. And it's a bad film. It's a bad film. I don't know if I liked one or the other better. So, but we'll get to that. But those are what I watched. What'd you watch, Matt?
Nothing really. The only thing, because I've been busy doing editing, and I've been doing interviews for the special features of Never Hike Alone 2. And so I've been pretty busy with all that stuff, so I haven't really had a lot of extra time. I really had to like squeeze the picks this time into watch, but I was able to watch the first episode of the new True Detective season, and it and I bring it up only because it's starting out with a horror, definitely a horror element to it. It's set in northern Alaska in an area where the sun does not come up for a few months during the winter, and and so that's why I think this season is called Night something or other, and Jodie Foster's
Days a Night.
What's that?
30 Days a Night.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. And Jodie Foster's in it. She plays a cop. But it's so far it's like a mystery that it's set in a town in this, you know, northern Alaska, and there is this research facility, and it's very The Thing like in a way. It's sort of a North Pole or Arctic research facility. And there's a bunch of people living there, and all of a sudden something happens. You're not sure exactly what. And the next thing they do is they cut to a delivery guy who's bringing them food and supplies. And he comes in, and there's like music playing from a video that they had been watching, and everything looks like it had just been left and no one's there. Like, it just looks like they just picked up in the middle of meals, in the middle of what they're doing, and disappeared. And so the police come, Jodie Foster comes in to investigate, and they're like, where are these people? Based on the decay of the food that was left over, they figure it had been at least 2 days, 48 hours since they had been there. But it was like they just disappeared in the middle of whatever they were doing. That's as much as I'll give you on it, but it definitely has a vibe that is similar to The Thing, kind of, I guess, and or at least is giving that vibe intentionally. Now, this show is True Detective, so I'm assuming it's not going to go supernatural or horror in any way, but I don't know. I have no idea what – maybe this is going to be a different kind of thing. I don't know, but right now it's definitely giving horror vibes, so definitely worth checking out. We'll see how it goes, but I've read reviews by critics who have seen the whole season, and it's got pretty good reviews so far. So definitely, you know, seems like it's at least horror genre adjacent. So, and that's all. That's all I really watched. I will mention that we, when we're having dinner, we tend to watch like a sitcom or something like that. And we have, are going back through the seasons of What We Do in the Shadows. And oh my God, I had not revisited the early seasons since I watched them the first time. And it's so good. It's just so brilliantly written, amazing show. So if you have not watched What We Do in the Shadows, highly, highly recommend it. I know Joe's a big fan as well. So
I wish you were my parents. But my parents never let me watch TV when we were at the dinner table. The TV always had to be off.
Yeah.
No fun.
Yeah. We definitely always, we like to watch something. When Rez was little, it used to be Ghost Adventures. That was kind of our tradition. But now we don't watch anything too long. So we usually just watch a sitcom, and that's about it. So, all right. Well, this week, our pick is Superfans. So, Superfan, tell us about your pick, why you decided to pick it, and take us through it.
And pick it good.
Oh, whip it. Yeah. Toby Hooper. What? What? You're already starting on me. I haven't even said one word yet. You just... Toby Hooper films. Hooper.
Hooper. Hooper, get clear of the barrel.
Hooper. since we did a little tribute to the master John Carpenter, I decided why not a tribute to the horror film legend, Tobe Hooper.
Hooper!
I feel like most people only know him for Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Poltergeist, so I picked some not so well-known films. But, of course, we had to include Poltergeist since we never really had reviewed it. Some facts on this man, on Tobe Hooper. He was
Hooper, where are you?
He was born in Austin, Texas in 1943 and passed away at age 74 in 2017. His first film was an independent film called Eggshells in 1969 and gained everyone's attention with one of the greatest horror films of all time, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. He also directed the 1979 TV miniseries Salem Slot that I did not know that he directed that.
Yep.
He directed only 16 films in his career. So, gentlemen, are we ready to dive in to some of his films?
Probably more like 15 and a half.
Yeah. Yeah. Correct on that.
But I guess we'll get into that later. What was this guy's name again?
His name's Tobe Hooper.
Hooper, hurry it up now, tie it on.
Okay, so we're going to go with the first one, Toolbox Murders. Toolbox Murders, 2005, I believe. I saw somewhere that it was 2004, but yeah. It's some say 2005, some say 2004, so Joe's insinuating that it's 2004, so I'm definitely going to believe Joe on that.
I don't even know the meaning of the word insinuate. Or do I?
So Toolbox Murders is a historic Hollywood hotel, houses a supernatural evil. It's been quiet for decades. But when renovations start, a series of murders take place. This film was a little bit of a slog for me, a run-of-the-mill cookie-cutter slasher film with a lot of cheap jump scares. And the cheap jump scares, how I mean is that every time there was a cheap jump scare, they had that boom, you know, that sound, you know, you hear from like Scream and other horror films. Every single time they did it, and it even put it in at the very end of the film, I just rolled my eyes. Although I was getting intrigued with some of the Egyptian and signs around the hotel and somewhat detective storyline, only to find out it was some kind of a spell. I was just, you know, shrugging my shoulders like, okay. A coffin birth is the first time I ever heard of a coffin birth. And I really don't understand how that even happened. Like, don't you have to embalm somebody? And the baby's like, they heard the baby screaming in the coffin and it was climbing itself out. It wasn't really even like explained like well, but I thought that was just weird. And how to explain this kind of background of what this killer is. A fun fact on this, I don't know if this is true or not. I saw it in some of the trivia, but Christian Bale wanted to be in this film really bad and reached out to Tobe Hooper and said, yeah, I want to be in this film. And Tobe Hooper never replied back, so he worked on Batman Begins. So I don't know what Christian Bale must have been hurting for a job or something. I don't know. Either that or he loved the original that I saw, and I don't know why he would even like that. So I just found that really weird. But yeah, it was just like a run-of-the-mill cookie-cutter slasher. I wasn't really impressed with it at all. Joe, what'd you think?
I genuinely really like this film.
Oh, wow. Like
this was a hidden gem for me. I've always heard about the Toolbox Murders. It was always on a list of things that I thought I should watch, and I never got around to it until now. I'm glad I did. It's a general run-of-the-mill slasher, but I thought it had great pacing. I liked the jump scares, despite how they were executed. I really liked some of the kills, especially the janitor with the circular saw. I thought was very well done. Saffron getting stapled to the ceiling, I really liked. There was great gaslighting in this film. I liked how, as the plot went on, it became more of a mystery of, you know, trying to find out the origins of the building. The characters were great. They were interesting enough that I got a taste of them, but I didn't have to get too invested in them. And Sherry Moon Zombie's in this with the opener, and she did it as a favor to her husband, who I guess owed Toby Hooper a favor, but she did a great, like, she set the pace to the film quite well in the opening. And I did want to point out one particular actor. His name is Greg Travis. He was the building manager of this. He is in another movie that we are forced to watch called Mortuary. Much better in this one, although I didn't care for him in either. But yeah, out of the two, I would by far pick his performance in this one. And
he had the funniest kill.
Yes. Yes, he did. But I...
Oh, God, just kill me. Like, what?
I, you know, wrapping things up, I genuinely like this one. This was probably, outside of Poltergeist, the favorite movie of the bunch.
Oh no.
Interesting.
Okay.
So take that, all you people who think I don't like anything.
I wasn't expecting you liking this one, Joe. You shocked me.
I think Joe has a affinity for 2000s horror, though, so it kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Matt, what about you? What'd you think of it?
I'm in between you guys. I didn't love it like Joe did, but I liked it, I think, more than you did, Mark. I do think that quirky neighbor, I agree that was really cool how she was stapled to the top. But why didn't the cops keep going into the apartment to check? Like,
it's not necessary. So, yeah, everything's fine here.
Obviously, everything looks okay. Like, I would expect them to walk over into the next room at least. You know,
hey, my God. Matt, are you pointing out the skills of the bumbling cops?
Yes, I am. Okay,
it's
once again, we've got
every
bumbling
movie
cops,
needs them. Yeah, yep,
who just, you know, they're just not doing their jobs at all.
Back the blue, Matt.
Yeah.
Don't tell them how to do their job.
Exactly. But yeah, the quirky, she was trying a little too hard. I have a feeling the actress, this was not in her wheelhouse, and she was trying really hard to be a quirky neighbor because it came off as somebody trying to be a quirky neighbor. I love Juliet Landau from Buffy. She's Drusilla from Buffy. You're acting, Mark, like you don't know who I'm talking about. She was the girl who was running, the neighbor who
lost
ran
all the weight.
All the time. Yeah,
oh,
lost all the weight.
I didn't even realize that.
Yeah.
Oh,
that
wow.
Was Drusilla. Her name's Juliet Landau from Buffy.
Yeah.
There is long stretches where not a lot happens, especially in the first half of the movie, where it's just kind of getting to know the characters a little bit, and it wasn't particularly interesting. I do like what's her name, Angela Bettis. She plays May in the movie May, which I really like that movie. If you've never seen it before, it likely will be in a pick of mine coming up. Not the next one, but at some point this year, I will get May in there. It definitely looks like a 2000s horror movie. It's got the color grading that was very much popular during this period. And then I wrote this note. This guy is a terrible shot with that nail gun until he's not.
Yeah.
He's like a horrible
shot. You
gotta
hit him once.
I know. And then all of a sudden he hits her like exactly where he needs to. Unless that was just him toying with her, I guess. But the killer, I'm not a big fan of that costume. It seemed like the, you know, the top or whatever's covering his head is fine, but the robe that he's wearing looked like a cheap spirit Halloween costume of Scream, like the robe, you know.
He reminded me of Darkman.
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a good film.
But I was interested. I thought it was okay. And I didn't I don't think I disliked it as much as you, Mark, but I was in between on this one. I found it entertaining enough. There were some stretches that I found myself zoning out a little bit. But I wasn't sure if that was just me, you know, or if it was the movie. But overall, you know, I liked the way it wrapped up. I thought, you know, him having her strapped down to that table saw was, you know,
it didn't go anywhere,
but I thought that was an exciting scene nonetheless. And it definitely felt to me like a callback to Texas Chainsaw, that I thought that the killer in that moment at least started acting like Leatherface a little bit. He got a little squirrely there until the boyfriend showed up. Not bad.
Yeah, but my question is, it's like, why would you ever move into that place in the first place? I mean, what a shithole.
It's cheap.
Yeah, it's cheap. They couldn't afford much.
And you know what? There's something to be said about having a setting in a big building like that. It's a great way to introduce a whole bunch of characters that are in a confined space. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do, you know, other scenes. It's like Evil Dead Rise, you know, that all those people, that entire movie lives, or half that movie, I should say, lives on one floor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need to have all these exotic settings to have a great horror film.
Yeah.
But it makes sense because it's a bunch of actors and people who are trying to pay for rent by waiting tables and stuff like that. So
the two main ones weren't actors. One was a pre-doctor and the other one was a teacher.
Right. Yeah.
The other people were actors, but still, yeah. I mean, that was just, I don't know. I would have never moved into something like that. That's
but
crazy.
even pre-doctors, as you call them, or maybe an intern, they don't have a whole lot of money right off the bat because they got to pay for their schooling.
Yeah, so
here rent is pretty, I mean, it was bad. I lived in a place like that, actually, when I was for a minute.
Oh, wow. So. Well, I lived in a walk-in closet for a year, remember, Matt? So I get it.
It was an office.
Yeah. So the next film that we're going to talk about is the 1976 Eaten Alive. Eaten Alive. It's a psychotic redneck who owns a rundown hotel in a rural East Texas, who kills various people who upsets him or his business, and then feeds their bodies to a large crocodile that he keeps as a pet. Starring Robert Englund and Carolyn James, who starred as Morticia in the Addams Family, a TV series, and Marilyn Burns, who was in the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, who was Sally, the lead, and a young Kyle Richards from Carpenter's original Halloween, the little girl.
Yep.
I've never seen this film before, and after doing research, this is a very well-loved film and considered a cult classic. I'm on the fence with this one. I felt like I was watching a play of some sort that, since it basically only had 2.5 sets, basically, it was outside of the hotel and inside a couple rooms, and then the whorehouse / bar. I mean, that's basically all you really saw, and it just kept going back and forth. I think this could be made into a play if anybody ever wanted to do it. I don't know who would go see it, but it felt like a play watching it, especially with like the red hues and the lighting of it. I just felt like, you know, I was watching a play. I don't know. I mean, I can generally say, you know, I don't think I'm ever going to watch this film again. I'm glad I saw it. It was a romp stomp film. I mean, I thought the ending was very Texas Chainsaw Massacre feels to it. Just the lead actor, I forgot its name, but I was actually intrigued with him. But some of the pacing of it was just totally off, like him lighting
Neville Brand.
Yeah, Neville Brand. Some of the pacing was a little off, like, you know, just playing that country music and he's just turning on lamps after lamp after lamp. And I'm just like, oh God, they're just trying to make the movie long so it could be released on, you know, in the theaters or something. I didn't mind it. I found it okay, you know, for its time and, you know, it, in the 70s, it did feel like, you know, a 70s film. And I thought Robert Englund was incredible in this film. Wasn't expecting that beginning of the film of him trying to have anal sex with a prostitute, a newly prostitute. That was kind of disturbing to watch at the very beginning. But no, it was fine. And I loved the dog kill. I loved it. I thought it was great. And it also had a little bit of a hint. And Matt, I apologize if I say this, but a little David Lynch feel to it, especially with the parents and the daughter with the husband just going absolutely like just insane in that hotel room. And he's just pointing and he's got that weird face. I was going, holy David Lynch. I just felt that vibe during that scene. I mean, absolutely not all the way through the film, but that scene, exactly, I felt David Lynch. So, Matt, what did you think of Eden Alive?
I loved it. This movie. This was my favorite of the bunch. You know, aside from Poltergeist, obviously. But even, I mean, I thought it was fantastic. In fact, that was my second note. Oh, I think I love this movie. Holy shit, William Finley. He's the actor who with his wife, and he reaches out like he's trying to twist the wig off of her head or something like that. Yeah. Like he had this weird look on his face. So demented, very David Lynch. Love the colors. It's a lot, all these primary colors. So incredible. His whole place seemed orange, and then the walls inside were green. The stuff with Kyle Richards under there's like half the movie is her under the couch. Under the porch, sorry.
Yeah.
Under the porch, crawling around, and what's his name? The actor, Neville Brand, crawling in after and say, come here, I got something for you, you know? And she's like,
girl,
no, I don't.
Little girl, just like driving massacre.
And she's like, no, no. But then, you know, and him chasing her with a scythe, that was so fantastic. I absolutely loved Robert Englund in this as well. I loved him. His kill was fantastic. Let's see. And I said, this is some weird shit, which is just, it was right up my alley. The whole bar scene is so good. So good.
It is
pure David Lynch. And that was on my notes too. So I'm glad I wasn't the only one who noticed it, but that whole bar scene, it's the weirdest bar of all time. There's those two guys sitting at the bar, kind of like looking at each other and talking or whatever. And then there's that guy who walks up to the other guy, and we don't know any of these people. Like, we haven't been introduced to any of them except for Robert Englund. And then the sheriff, when he comes in with the girl. Otherwise, we're all of a sudden being introduced to a whole cast of people that we haven't really been around yet. And there's one guy who's kind of trying to bully this little guy who's playing pool. That is pure David Lynch. There's no way. There is no way that David Lynch hasn't watched this. And
you mean Marlo?
Is that the guy's name?
Guy's name is Marlo. I have my note down here that Marlo must be the Southern slap fight champion of the Deep South.
He's slapping the guy.
He can't throw a punch, but he can sure slap the shit out of somebody.
Yeah.
He had a Napoleon syndrome big time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, God.
It was hilarious. It was so funny.
Much taller and bigger than him, too. Just like, what the?
Yeah, it was terrific. And then, you know, the main guy, Neville Brand, just so creepy and weird. And I just, you know, don't know, you know, one minute he's trying to be a nice guy and the next minute he's trying to murder everyone. It's just why would the woman at Hattie's, the African-American woman who worked at Hattie's the brothel. She told the girl, because so it starts out, you've got Robert Englund trying to do anal sex with this girl who doesn't even know if she wants to do prostitution at all, or, you know, and so she leaves. They say, well, you leave. Obviously, this isn't for you. And the woman directs her to go to the Starlight Hotel or whatever, the Starlight Inn or whatever it's called. Why would she direct him if that guy was such a weirdo? Like, why would she tell her to go and stay there? But
she gave her $10 and said, yeah, go. They're go
probably
there.
All members
but
the
don't say you're from the brothel, because, you know, that'll be bad. What'd you say, Joe?
They're probably all members of the Chamber of Commerce, and they thrive on referrals, you know.
Yeah. But yeah, now this, and then I noticed, I was like, I also wrote this note, I guess this crocodile never gets full, because he seems to be up for a meal anytime somebody comes close to his pond. I don't think that's how that works. I think once a croc eats an entire person, then they're probably full for a while. I think it's probably safe to be around them unless you encroach on their territory in some way. But jumping up onto a deck to grab somebody is probably not in the game once they've eaten a whole person.
They don't eat for like months, Matt.
Yeah,
like months.
They'll go a long time, but it's obviously, you know, they can't. That's not going to make for a very good movie. But I agree, it could almost be a play. And I'd read some other reviews about it saying kind of the same thing. And I liked it. I had a lot of fun with this one. And this was the last one I watched, and so I was dreading it a bit. But I wound up having a great time with it. So, yeah. That's all I have.
Joey, you loved it, didn't you? You loved it.
I don't have a single good thing to say about this film.
I knew it.
Yeah, it was painful. It was painful to watch. I can't believe that he did this right after Texas Chainsaw Massacre, because that's like the textbook definition of a giant step down. First off, this Neville Brand guy, if they were to have remade this in, let's say, 1985, they should have just used Stephen King from Creepshow, because it was the exact same guy. I felt so bad to see Carolyn Jones on screen. She looked awful. Carolyn Jones was Morticia. She, you know, from the Addams Family, she played Miss Hattie.
She used
to be.
Yeah.
Not in this film. She's not. Yeah.
She
looked gray. It was like gray makeup.
She looked like witch undertones or something. It was terrible.
She looked like a Dawn of the Dead zombie.
I almost thought that she had like latex on and they were going to pull that off at some point and she'd be this beauty or something, but no.
Nope. Never went anywhere. She's just the ugly brothel.
It was a weird choice. Nobody else looked like that. And there was no explanation why she looked like that.
Yeah. Again, you guys are in love with all these primary colors. I have a note on there. Why is the light red outside? I know they did this on a soundstage, but I don't know why. I really want to know what the budget for frog sound effects was for this movie, because that's all I could hear, except for the quote unquote soundtrack, which was just a bunch of strumming bows across like wires and coils throughout most of it. It was really, really like low rent. The sheriff is a lazy sack of shit and he needs to start doing his job. But
he just wanted
again,
to get laid.
You know, I'm not going to be a hypocrite. That's just, you know, what the fuzz does down there. The gator or the croc, whatever it was, the first time we see that thing, he is like 5 foot long from the tip of his snout to the end of his tail. And then he eats Snoopy. And then the next time we see him, when he goes to eat Roy, he's like five times bigger. There's no consistency in this croc. I guess eating a dog makes you swell up in size, I guess. Roy's a lunatic. I felt like that first prostitute, she had such a terrible first day. The poor girl can't catch a break. First Freddy Krueger wants to sodomize her, and she has to quit her job. Then she gets called a whore by a hillbilly. Then she falls down a flight of stairs, and she's killed by a rake and then fed to a croc. You know, bad first day on the job. There's my note again about Marlowe's the southern slap fight champion of that neighborhood. it just, the whole thing just didn't make sense. It's just, I think it's a little too hillbilly for me, but no, didn't trip my trigger.
Yeah, I
have a review that this guy that I follow, he's a reviewer, and after I watched it, and I was like, oh my god, I wanted to look up more information about this, and so I looked on Letterboxd, and this guy, he wrote like a great, it summed up exactly what I'd been thinking about it. He said, he gave it 4 stars. Quite the jewel, a wash in primary color, artificiality, and sweat and smoke. This is some set-bound hot house play like Tennessee Williams reimagined as a grindhouse bloodbath, with that roiling whirlpool of all-consuming self-loathing literalized as a man-eating crocodile in the front yard that keeps anyone from getting out alive. Awesome. And I was like, that is exactly what I
will agree with the Tennessee Williams aspect
of
it.
Yeah. So loved it. Loved it.
So Matt loved it. I was on the fence, and Joe loathed it. Yeah. Loathed it.
Like, that's why I'm on the show. Somebody's got to be the bad guy.
No. You're always the good guy, Joe. And so since what's that?
It's the opposite of the previous movie. Joe loved the you. Right. I was on the fence, and you were low. Yeah. We're like cycling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there's still a couple movies to go.
Well, here we go with one that I know all of us loved, and that is the 1985 Life Force.
That's not true.
Oh, don't say that, Joe. Now I'm going to get disappointed because I fucking love this movie. This movie is about a space shuttle mission investigating Halley's Comet. It brings back a sexy naked vampires to London, where chaos ensues. I mean, I fucking love this movie. I've been wanting to review this film for a long time. I remember watching this film back when I was a kid. I think I saw it on the movie channel before it was discontinued. I think, I don't know. I'm just blown away with this film. I mean, what's not to love? I mean, you have hot, naked vampire woman throughout like half the film. Really great acting, I think, on all levels. The practical effects are wonderful. You got a young Patrick Stewart, a nice twist on the vampire lore. You've never seen anything like this with vampires. They're not sucking blood. They're sucking the life force out of you, these space vampires.
Kirk Colin Robinson.
I mean, and then you got Armageddon with zombies running around. I mean, it's a great story. I love this film. Unfortunately, the budget was a whopping $25 million in 1985, and that was pretty expensive back in the day. It's a canon from Canon Films, and yeah, I know Joe's giving that, yep, it's canon. They didn't make a really good films back then. There's a great documentary. I don't know the name of it, but you can find it, about the whole history of Canon Films, and it's probably one of the best documentaries on film I've ever watched, or at least the funniest. But it only made $11.5 million. I think this film's great. We're going to go to Matt, because I know Matt loves this film.
I think love's a strong word, but I did enjoy it a lot. I thought good. This was pretty good. Yeah. I would put Eaten Alive above it, but it's pretty close. I don't want to say close, because I really loved Eaten Alive, but I really enjoyed this. I thought it was well done. Matilda May is fantastic. She's like, I don't mean acting wise, but like, she's game for whatever. I mean, this could have been, they could have like hidden some stuff. Now it was full everything in this. And I there's some quirky stuff in here. I don't know that I could follow the plot, but I don't think I cared. It was a basic plot. They're just trying to get these vampires, but like, there's a lot of stuff going on in this. That ship is definitely not close to 100 miles long or 2 miles high. They said the thing's 200 miles long, and then when they get up to it, their own ship, which is obviously not anywhere, not even a quarter of a mile big, it's a space shuttle, looks like it's not that much shorter than the ship. Like if it's 2 miles high, you should have almost no vision on screen of what's the top and what's the bottom. And if it's 100 miles long, it should go on further than you can see in both directions. So they didn't quite get the scale on that right. But I suppose if you're getting out, a measurement stick, maybe it's, you've lost him. And then one of the characters says, I almost have a feeling I've been here before, if you know what I mean. It was like a kind of a sexy reading to that line. I don't understand why. There's a hell of a lot of doors in the lab. For some reason, like half of it is them trying to get between doors to the, could we eliminate a couple doors so that at least get the action going?
Yeah, I have to interject. That's one of my notes. There are so many doors in this facility. When the girl wakes up, the scientists have to open and close like 8 doors to get to her.
Yeah.
What an odd choice.
He's running from his office into the lab and it takes him 5 minutes to get there because there's so many doors.
Good thing they weren't locked. Because then would have had to find keys.
Yeah, security's not high here. You've got these creatures that they don't know anything about from another. For all they know, they're
why lock a door?
Yeah, why lock them down? It's a Hammer film, basically. I mean, he basically made like a futuristic Hammer movie, which I'm down for that. The undead body scene I thought was fantastic. You know, that whole part of it was great. The ship is very phallic shaped. Once you really get a look at it, it's quite phallic shaped.
Shocker.
Shocker. But I love the concept of it being kind of caught up in the tail of Halley's Comet. You know, I thought that was kind of cool that it was caught up in that. Let's see. Also, what's his name? I guess not necessarily a young Patrick Stewart, but younger Patrick Stewart. It was a few years before.
A couple of years after Patrick's, Excalibur.
Did he ever have hair?
I don't know.
No, I've never seen him in a role with hair.
With hair. Yeah. I mean, maybe when he was really young, but it was a couple of years before Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah.
And
I just picture him in grade school looking like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably. Yeah. So I liked Life Force. I thought this was pretty good. I thought that the special effects, not too shabby. It definitely had some kind of budget. They were Joe's hating it, but I thought they were all right.
I thought they were great. Were fine. A little Roger Corman at the beginning, but then at the end, I mean it's just they just got a dump truck of film or money, and they just dumped it all at the end with, it was a fantastic ending. I mean, that was a lot of money they spent. I mean, yeah, the London looked, you could tell it was like miniatures and they're blowing it up, but it's a Hammer film. It's a Hammer film, but still, I mean, there was a lot of money spent on this. It had a sword. It had a sword. A really cool looking sword.
It did have a cool looking sword.
It did.
Yeah. So I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. So.
Well, I appreciate that, Matt. And let's go with Joe now, because Joe loves this film.
Oh, yeah, he does.
So I want to point out Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, 2001 A Space Odyssey, Alien, Terminator, Blade Runner, even the fucking Ghostbusters movies were all made before this. And had far superior graphics than this did in 1985. I felt like I was watching The Black Hole from Disney, which I liked. Wow. But the graphics in this, from the beginning of this, we figured out a way to handle weightlessness out in space so it doesn't look like we have to pay for the graphics anymore. It was hokey from the beginning. And I think this is lazy filmmaking, in my opinion. And it's... Again, I think you hit the nail on the head with the Roger Corman thing, because all this is an excuse to slap around some broads and, objectify them. Because why would we go ahead and make these alien vampires? Why would we spend any money on creating a being or an entity or something visual that I can look at when we can just put a naked woman on the screen and have her have sex with guys all day. But then go watch a goddamn porn. I wanted to watch a horror sci-fi film.
Well, it's space vampire. It's from the novel.
It's space horseshit. You know what? I was reading through the trivia on this film, and I read way too much about Matilda May's bush because Toby Hooper was really like he wanted it shaved bald, and then this hairdresser woman's got to go in there. She's like, "Well, we gotta regrow some of it. You can see too much." Like I know so much about the merkin that they had to make for her to slap on the top of it so that you couldn't see everything. And again, that's just all I think about in this film is great. Put the chick in there, take all of her clothes off. And then all of a sudden at the end of the movie, she has clothes for some reason. And I can't figure out why. And I thought the ending was dumb too, that they just, her and Carlson, they just decided that we're going to go off up in space.
Yeah. She took the clothes off for that one woman.
Park that they found in the park.
But I agree with you, Joe.
It's this male-centric universe that they're in. And like, there's three people that they got, three vampires, one of which happens to be a woman. They don't say jack shit about the two naked guys that they brought down from outer space. They're naked vampires, too. We don't even talk about them. This is ridiculous. And the whole interrogation scene with Picard, it looked like fucking Poltergeist without the budget. I mean, you can clearly see that's where they got the white lights that were coming up out of them. That those were the souls that were coming down the stairs. He just carbon copied it.
Yeah, he used
this,
it
similar. Again. Lazy filmmaking. Let's just copy it and paste it.
I thought the stuff going around that office looked really good.
I had more awe watching Zool on the top of that tower in Ghostbusters than I did this.
Ghostbusters, how much did Ghostbusters cost? I mean, to make.
I don't care. It was only
$25 million. I mean, it is canon. I mean, they're not going to throw $100 million. Well, I think they did with Masters of the Universe or something. But no, actually, I think it was Over the Top was a really expensive one that they did.
And thank God there was that helicopter pilot in there. Because that helicopter's pilot's job is to move the story along from point A to point B. He is the most informed helicopter pilot in any film I've ever known. Like, he can get in touch with anybody from his headset, and he can just move that plot from A to B to C.
Joe,
here you go, guys.
You obviously have not benefited from a good helicopter pilot.
I've never been in a helicopter. I didn't realize the schooling that those guys had beyond aeronautics. So. Yeah.
They're salt of the earth, those guys.
Oh, yeah. Doing the Lord's work. I do want to point out, though, Aubrey Morris is in there. I liked him. Aubrey Morris was in Clockwork Orange.
Yeah.
He was like the... truant officer, I guess, for lack of a better word, that found him back in his home and... Yeah.
He was in another film too, I don't remember, but I recognized him from another film too, but I didn't remember Clockwork Orange until you mentioned it. But
I'm so happy you mentioned the amount of doors in this film.
Yeah,
I will say this.
Glass.
I do have one thing to say about it. I really like the soundtrack. It's Henry Mancini. They took like $24 million of that budget and gave it to Henry. Here you go.
It's great. It's great. It's a great film. Thanks for liking it, Joe. So our next film we're going to go is Mortuary, 2005. Is that another
Joe did not enjoy this pick.
Joe, I feel like we're doing a Corey Feldman episode or something. I mean, have we hit on any cylinders with you?
I like the Toolbox Murders.
Okay. Well, Mortuary, a family moves to a small town in California where they plan on starting a new life while running a long abandoned funeral home. The locals fear the place, which is suspected to be on haunted ground. Okay, guys, this is one of the films that I'm going to apologize for, because when I was watching this film, I was just absolutely, my mouth was dropped. I'm just going, holy shit. I felt really bad for making Joe and Matt watch this film. I didn't know if I was watching a comedy or a horror film, because this was really, really poorly made. And it starts with the mom. I don't know why. Who was the mom that? Denise Crosby.
Denise Crosby,
who played the mom from Pet Sematary. Yeah,
right. She was better in this than she was in Pet Sematary. Like in Pet Sematary, I didn't think she was very good in that movie. But no. But I thought she was better in this than that.
Oh,
I will say, I will agree at the beginning of this film, but the minute she starts cooking everybody dinner, that's where I fall off.
Yeah, I fell off even before that when, I guess it wasn't her fault when she's trying to embalm somebody and she's looking at a book.
That was so weird.
That was so weird. That whole five minute with the kids and the music going on, the kids smoking pot, and then the cop shows up.
Wait a minute. I thought, now
you should probably give a synopsis of the film.
I thought for a minute that I missed something, because I have to admit I was drifting in and out on this one, but there was it ever established that she didn't know what she was doing as a mortician?
No, it was established at the beginning. She went to school. She said she had a dream, a dream to do this. This is what she's always wanted to do. And, you know, she bought this funeral home. So apparently, you know, she went to school for this. I mean, she's got to have a license for,
Is that I don't think it was ever established that she didn't know what she was doing.
Having a dream to do this, and I was interpreting that as having her own funeral home.
Right.
Yeah.
Not I'm going to take a stab at, you know, arc welding for the first time.
I got the books.
Yeah,
I'm gonna try it now.
I watched it on YouTube.
Yeah,
it looks pretty easy.
How hard could it be?
Yeah, sewing an arm on. You know, and she's going, "Oh, this is pretty good," and then the arm just drops, and I'm just going, "Holy shit!" And she's got, you know, just dead cadavers up in, you know, in coffins that she put there because they're $400 each. I mean, her character was just so dumb. It was just poorly written.
Maybe do the synopsis, maybe to lead us off, I guess. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's about this mom, her son, and this little girl who I found really annoying. I didn't think she was that great of an actress until like later on. She was okay, but they moved to a funeral home that she buys. It's totally run down. The father's not around because he passed away, and she's going to start up her own funeral business and embalm people and whatnot. And the son gets a job at a diner, you know, meets some bullies. There's some creepy things going on around the house. There's like this black mold fungus, you know, on the walls and whatnot. They had that actor who was in the Toolbox Murder, who played the salesman or whatnot, and
Craig Travis.
Yeah, Travis, who's laughing every single sentence and line that he does. Laughing.
I love that.
it was horrible acting. I'm sorry. And
it was, but I loved it.
Yeah, but Toby Hooper's just allowing this. Like, he sees this, he's going, yeah, this is good. This is how I want it. This doesn't credit Toby Hooper as a director, as a good director. It's like, in my opinion, he's got 2.5 awesome films. He's got Texas Chainsaw Massacre. He's got Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, and then a half a Poltergeist that we'll get to.
I thought you loved Life Force.
Well, I'm on the fence with Eating Alive. Life Force is great. So he's got 3.5 for me, as far as I've seen.
What about the Salem's Lot? You didn't like Salem's Lot?
I'm on the fence with that one. I'm on the fence with that one. But so anyways,
there's, you know, there's fungus, there's black goo shooting in people's mouth, and then they get possessed and chaos ensues. And it's just, I hated this movie. It did not work for me. I mean, that scene with the mom with the embalming and reading a book, trying and going, okay, so you put this there. I'm like, it just makes no sense. And I'm fine with films not making sense, but for this, like, it's just not coherent. It's just a half-assed, lazy directed film. Joe, what'd you think?
Irredeemable. There's not a whole lot of good things in this film.
No.
They say there's no small parts. I've seen a handful of these actors in other things before. And like Greg Travis, I've seen him in other things. Lee Garlington, who was the diner owner, the older lady.
She was the best actor in the whole entire film.
I've seen her in things before. The guy that was the sheriff, Michael Wiles is his name.
Yeah, character.
He was in, he had a small, really small part in Fight Club.
Mm-hmm.
Even Dan Byrd, the teenage boy, the son, I've seen these people in other stuff before, and they've been better than this. So I don't know what about this. It's like, it's just sucked the life out of everybody. It was like they had nothing to go off of. It was written so poorly, and it was such a dumb concept that there was nothing you could do with it. You know, you could put Brad Pitt and Eliza Dushku or whoever the hell you want in any of these roles, and they're all going to suck. It just started off terribly. The real estate agent, you know, again, Greg Travis, why would you? It was the most notable, I guess, the insistent laughing nonstop, but it's just so over the top. It took me out of it. The teenage girls and their boyfriend in the diner all the time. It's just, you kind of knew what was going to happen, just the way they're slouching in their chairs. And, you know, another thing, we find out that salt plays a big role in defeating these zombies or whatever the hell this black licorice stuff was that's growing all over the place. Who's got like 6 giant containers of salt in their pantry, in their home? Like, I've got maybe 1 big container of Morton salt. They had like 6 to 10 of these things, and they used them like ammunition.
Yeah. I think the reason, or they had all that salt, the reason or the explanation is just, ooh, somebody likes to make ice cream. And that line is just so fucking dumb. Sorry.
Oh, that, yeah. And again, I'm like Matt, I was so taken aback with Denise Crosby, how she knew nothing about how to be a mortician. Like, she should know at least minimally whether or not it's legal or illegal to show a corpse to a bunch of teenagers, like, for fun.
Yeah.
You know, that's probably a no. It's probably something they covered on the first day of mortician school. And that setting, that house that they bought, I realize it's supposed to be run down, but there's no way that place is supposed to be used as a funeral parlor. There's no way you could, you know, have somebody from the town die and people go have a wake there. It was just decrepit.
Yeah.
So I understand they wanted to make it spooky, but I think they went a little too run down, over the top. Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of this one. This was pretty much garbage.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Scraped it off my shoe. Yeah.
But Matt loved it.
No.
Yeah.
I didn't hate it as much as you guys did. I thought I didn't see a whole lot of difference between this and Toolbox Murders, honestly. I thought they were about the same level. I thought it was okay. I kind of liked the boy and the girl relationship at the restaurant. I was kind of into them for a little bit, but yeah, the mom, that whole thing with her not knowing how to be a mortician, I don't know what the reason for that was, if it was supposed to be comedy or what. I thought this realtor was hilarious. I loved that he was just laughing all the time. I don't know why that choice was made and why they went with it, but I thought it was hilarious. Not intentionally hilarious, obviously, but It's, you know, the whole thing was a bit of a mess, I think. And I found it entertaining enough. I think I liked the Toolbox Murders a little bit more than this, but I really kind of see them as about the same level of quality. Just okay. This is definitely not his. At this point, he's just no. I think he was just trying to make. Probably just getting a paycheck at this point in his career. I doubt he was.
There was no effort.
Yeah, no.
Effort at all.
This was probably all that he was getting at the time.
You know? The computer graphics that at the end were just abysmal. It looked like a Windows 98 version of the Sarlacc pit at the end.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That was terrible. That was
fucking terrible.
Yeah, that was bad.
And I thought Denise Crosby's acting at the dinner table was bad too. It looked like I was watching like run in the mill, like small theater, and I don't know, the acting just wasn't there. Sorry guys, sorry for that one. But it is what it is. We've never seen it, and now we have.
Seen worse.
So let's. Yeah. Don't even. So let's move on to the next one and the last one, the final, the masterpiece. Who directed it? Who knows? But Tobe Hooper directed this film, perhaps. Or was it Spielberg?
Say that again. Hold on. Say it again.
Tobe Hooper.
I've got one more here. That's not working. Never mind. Go on. Damn it.
Hooper. So it's not much to say. If you haven't seen this film, then I don't know what you're doing in life and why you're putting it off. This film is a masterpiece. It's about a family's home that is being haunted by ghosts. That's the premise. It's a suburban California home. Family moves in to it, and it's a classic. It's a perfect film. I don't see really anything wrong with this film. I'll say how I like this film later, but we're going to go to you, Matt.
It's a classic. This was one of those movies that if you grew up in the 80s, it was probably one of your first experiences with a horror movie. And even if you grew up later than that, it might have been one of your first experiences, because it was I don't remember what rating it had.
PG.
It was PG, right?
It was PG.
And yep. I think this was before they came out with PG-13, which it probably would have been PG-13.
Yeah, Red Dawn was the first PG-13 film.
Yeah.
They get an R originally, and Spielberg pleaded and cut a bunch of stuff. Mm.
Ooh. Yeah, I do think it walks a fine line between a little too much, I guess, special effects and being a little more bare. I don't think that it, I think sometimes the special effects got a little bit in the way. There were a couple special effects that even at the time I thought felt a little fakey, like the ghostly, I don't know what the thing was I guess it was a person, but it was outside the door when Joe Beth Williams is trying to get into the door towards the end of into
the bedroom. I love that.
I don't care for that.
It just like howls at her. Oh it's man. Awesome.
Yeah. I didn't care for that. I feel like that takes you out of the movie a little, but that's just my personal preference. And then there are others that I think work really well, like when all the people are coming down the staircase. I think that really works well. So I kind of am up and down a little bit on it.
Graphics like that didn't really get perfected for another 3 years,
right?
When they came out with the other Tobe Hooper film,
yeah,
in
exactly,
space.
Exactly, exactly, Joe. Let's see, I always like the scene where she's scooting across the floor. That whole part, I like that. That you know, you, it, and the. these stories, you know, this was at that time period when Spielberg was big into giving you your cake and letting you eat it too, you know? And so by the end, now I did have, let me see. I had a couple notes here that I wanted to touch on. A bunch of guys hitting on a 15-year-old and the mom laughs. Like, I thought
that's
that was
my
a little
first
strange.
No, how brash.
And I remember thinking that when I saw it the first time when I was a kid, and I was like, that's gross. Like, what the heck?
Yeah.
Can you imagine that happening now? I can't imagine looking out my window if I had a daughter and seeing a bunch of 40-something workers like saying, oh, baby, and my 15-year-old dadding off to school on her skirt and her bicycle. That was creepy.
Well, I do have to
she
say
didn't handle
that
it well.
She had I knew Mark she, would she stand did. Up for the creeps. I knew Mark would have yeah. defense
not standing
creeps.
Up.
No, they were justified. Yeah, she no, had it coming. No. Look at the way she's dressed.
I,
she's no,
looking. Jumping to conclusions right now. I'm about to defend the mom's reaction because she was reacting to the daughter flipping him off. And that's what she liked that reaction. But that's why she had that reaction.
She laughed at the whole situation too, though. And I don't know many moms who would just think, oh, well, she handled it. Who cares about these creeps?
There's a lot of moms.
Yeah, those
out there
creeps
like that
would have been on another job the very next day.
No kidding. Yeah. Especially in the suburbs. Again, it is foreboding is just fantastic in this. And the whole setup is great. The third act of this movie is scary. The last scene, but I've always had a problem with that the movers are there. Why is all that furniture still there in the last scene? Why I don't get why the bed's still there, the shelves are still there, their toys are still there, and they're still there. Like they're all going to bed even though they're leaving that night. Like that whole part just doesn't make sense to me, and I don't understand why they allowed that to happen. Like how could they come up with a different solution? Like, oh, we're going to have to stay one more night, or the movers are coming in the morning, whatever it is. Like, or even that is hard to justify because you almost have a double climax. You know, you got this one scene. It almost becomes a double climax. You've got this situation that they come out of. And when they bring the daughter out of that world, that feels like that's the time to leave the house and end the movie. But it's like you've got to have one more big thing where all the shit hits the fan.
Well, they were told this house is clean.
I guess, but I wouldn't trust that. Would you? Would you stay in a house like that after you've gone through a situation like that? Hell
no. Well, I'd be gone that, you know, the minute I find Carol Ann again,
I'd be out the door and be like, I'm done.
But I think that's what makes this movie so unique is you get that second climax. If they had just left, that would have been the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And they're white people.
White people stay. I'm glad that they did because that last part was great with Jo Beth Williams going up on the ceiling and everything. I wish they had found a more logical way to make it happen, but that's the problem I've always had with that, with the movie. I love the relationship with the family. I think, Jo Beth Williams is fantastic in it. Like this is, you know, it definitely walks that fine line between a mass consumer entertainment and a legit horror movie. And so I think that's where this collaboration between Spielberg and Hooper really worked, is that they brought that balance there, to each other. So it's obviously a master. I mean, I don't know if I go so far as to say a masterpiece, but it's definitely a classic of horror and a classic haunted house film there. And it's scary, which a lot of times a big budget movie like this isn't particularly scary. It has some scary moments though. And especially that whole scene with the clown. Scary shit. I love that the way that was all set up and everything. I thought that obviously that's for me anyway, that's the big scary scene in the movie, the clown situation. I'm not sure why he still had it there with him, but that's, I guess, beside the point. So,
Joe, what'd you think? Or what have you thought?
I really like this film.
Yeah, right.
I have no bad things to say about it. The steak, the chicken leg, and the peeling of the face, whatever VHS copy I had of this as a child when it came out, that scene has got to be worn down to the nub, mm-hmm. because I probably rewatched that a bajillion times.
Yeah.
I absolutely loved it. I would be remiss if I didn't point out the soundtrack. This is a Jerry Goldsmith one. He did Aliens, Rudy, Gremlins, LA Confidential, The Omen. He also did the Universal Studios, you know, or Universal Pictures, the theme, you know, at the beginning of the film. Great soundtrack. Absolutely love it.
That was one of my notes, creepy. Too. I'm not a fan of the soundtrack. It's a little.
Really? What?
I think it's really? Too sentimental. I think it's too sentimental.
Oh, I love it. That's why it makes this film so
good. To me, it screams Spielberg, but that's just me.
Right. Which I don't think works, but yeah.
I do want to point out that two of my favorite screams, if you can call them that, are in this film. The first one, Craig T. Nelson, when he confronts his boss at the end and he's, you know, and finds out you didn't move the headstones and he screams, why twice. It's curdling in my ears. And then of course, one of my all-time favorite screams is that teenage daughter. When she gets out of that taxi cab and all those lights are flying out and she screams, what's happening? It's just like screaming from the bottom of her shoes up. Like that was a full body scream.
And she's got a hickey on her neck. All those little details hilarious.
I had a note about that too, Matt, about the room. Like everything was packed. Like when they open up Carol Ann's room. Oh no, sorry. That was the later note. Oh, speaking of sound effects, when you open up Carol Ann's door, and she was Craig T. Nelson was showing the paranormal investigators the things were flying all over the place. Mm-hmm. You can hear the sound effect of Darth Vader's TIE fighter in there.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I thought was neat. When the ghosts are coming down the stairs and they're watching it on camera, and it's like all these lost souls that are coming down the staircase. It really reminds me of like the opening of the Ark of the Covenant, Raiders of the Lost Ark. So apparently there were three people that died on this film.
Yeah.
So I know Carol Ann died and the teenage daughter was strangled by her boyfriend.
Yeah.
But also I guess I would call him the foreman.
Right.
But that the main guy, I think she called him Pluto or something.
Lugwin or something like that.
Lou Perryman.
Yeah.
He was killed with an axe by a 26-year-old man named Seth Christopher Tatum in Austin, Texas. I don't have a reason as to why, but it's just what I read on the trivia.
That happened like in 2011 or something like that.
Carol Ann didn't die until part three.
Yeah.
But the older daughter died not long after this movie came out.
Yeah. Yeah. It was in November, I guess. When it happened, she was strangled
and then she wasn't in part two.
Dead in a coma. She died November 4th.
And I do want to point out, just because something's on the trivia list of IMDb doesn't make it true, because this one, I really got to debate. It says real human skeletons were used in the swimming pool scene since the crew decided it would be too complicated and expensive to get fake ones. Joe Beth Williams was not made aware of this until after the scene was finished. I find that incredibly hard to believe.
I heard that too. Yeah.
I heard it too. I don't know if it's true, but
Universal would have had like some giant room that just, you know, some warehouse just filled with skeletons. Go ahead, pick whatever you want. Mm-hmm. This is a movie studio. How are they getting corpses? How are they getting bodies?
Yeah.
They're going over to the local mortuary and just taking their pick.
I mean, Steven Spielberg was producing this. He could have just run off to the set of Raiders of the Lost Ark, got tons of skeletons and corpses there.
But even them, I don't think they were using real human skeletons.
I don't know. But I mean, I'm just saying he could have used those, I guess, you know. But
yeah, I don't know.
No. I don't know.
I thought there were laws about that, but you know who would know is the woman from Mortuary. You know, she probably covered that under classes. So yeah, Poltergeist gets a big old thumbs up from me.
Yeah.
Maybe even two.
Yeah. Oh, I'll give Poltergeist two thumbs up. I love everything about this film. And it's basically because of my love for how real this family felt. Just with the canary dying and, you know, burying, you know, when my hamsters died, you know, I did the same thing, you know, with my parents. It just felt real. And just the scenes with, you know, the men are watching football and they had the remote control, you know, clicker, you know, war between with the neighbors, you know, going back and forth.
That scene is so Spielberg.
It's complete Spielberg. I mean, most of this film is complete Spielberg. I mean, yes, I will.
I love the kids with the remote control cars.
Yeah, yeah, that's Spielberg
making again. That guy crack his nuts on the bicycle and and spill the beer.
Spielberg again. It was Spielberg when she got the, you know, she says, "Can I have a goldfish?" And then, right, you see, you know, the scene with the goldfish and she's feeding the goldfish to death. She's going to kill another pet. You know, it's just completely Steven Spielberg. You know, I mean, he wrote this. He was on set most of the time. He had his hand on this, both hands on this film. And you can tell. I read what, you know, Matt had sent me. I was, you know, I was saying, oh, my gosh, this is a, you know, Steven Spielberg directed it. I still believe he directed a lot of this and had a lot to do with this. But yes, this is a Tobe Hooper film. He, you know, no one ever stood up for him is from what Matt sent to me, you know, when he was filming this. Like, there was a film that Kurt Russell was in that Steven Spielberg was doing, and Kurt Russell says, it's either I listen to this director or I listen to you, and I won't do both.
It was Robert Zemeckis.
Yeah, Robert Zemeckis.
Yeah, it was during Used Cars. He said, either Bobby Z gives me notes or you give me notes, but I'm not going to take them from both of you, and Spielberg apologized. But yeah, right. I mean, he's a hands-on producer for sure.
Yeah, yeah, he's a genius. And but I think it really, you can really tell like how much Steven Spielberg was just on this film. But yeah, no, I mean Tobe Hooper directed it. But yeah, the fried chicken, him clawing his face. I didn't eat fried chicken for a while after that. And I remember my brother going to see this film in the movie theater. I was too young to go. He slept in my room for a week after that, and he said the clown scene just rocked him to his core, and yeah, he slept in my room for a whole week. It was kind of annoying, but it's a great film. I love it, and glad we closed off on this. So that's Tobe Hooper films.
Excellent. Hooper.
Hooper.
Very good. So thank you, Mark, for a very interesting set of picks. I enjoyed most of these. The only one I don't know. There was none that I really hated, especially once I found the right Toolbox Murder movie to watch. That could have gone the other way. So the
Mortuary is really the only one that really bugged me. That was the only one that just killed me.
I didn't mind it. It certainly wasn't anything great, but
yeah.
Okay, so my next pick is it's basically sci-fi horror movies. This is more horror movies with science fiction. So here we go. There's five movies.
You're going to watch Life Force again?
Oh, I'd love to. Life Force.
We're going to watch Life Force five times. Actually, Life Force did inspire me to pick these movies.
Oh, great. So,
although I think Joe will probably like them more. So the first movie we're going to check out is from 1986, David Cronenberg's The Fly, starring Jeff Goldblum and Gina Davis.
Yes, one of my favorite films of all time. It's in my top 10.
I love it too. Love it. I actually saw The Fly about 6-7 years ago. I saw The Fly as a double feature with Possession, and that was interesting. So my second pick, Sorry. The Fly is available for rent on Amazon or Apple or any of the various. So unfortunately, that is a rental. The next movie, we have David Cronenberg. I'm going to make it Brandon Cronenberg and his son. And we're going to watch Possessor from 2020, starring Andrea Riseborough, who played Mandy in the movie Mandy. Jennifer Jason Leigh is also in it. So Sean Bean is in it. So this is Possessor, and you can find that on Hulu. So Possessor, that's one of my favorite movies from 2020. Next, Lee Whannell, director of, he's done a bunch of stuff. He works a lot with James Wan. And that is 2018's Upgrade. And that you can find on Max, I believe. Let me see if there's any other services that have it. No, just Max, or it's for rent. So that is, again, Upgrade from 2018, directed by Lee Whannell. Next, from 1997, Vincenzo Natali's Cube.
Nice.
This is Cube, and it is available on, it looks, says Amazon Prime, but also it's available on Canopy, Hoopla, Tubi, Plex. It's available on a lot of stuff. So that is Cube from 1997. And last but not least, hopefully not least, I haven't seen this one, but directed by Richard Stanley from 2019, Color Out of Space, starring Nicolas Cage, Jolie Richardson. And this is on Shudder, AMC Plus. Yeah, Shudder and AMC Plus. Also Hoopla, if you don't have those and you have a library card. So that's it. Once again, The Fly, Possessor, Upgrade, Cube, and Color Out of Space. All right. Hopefully, Color Out of Space says it's sci-fi, so I think it is. So, anyway, the rest I know are sci-fi.
All right.
So those are the five movies we'll be watching in the next 2 weeks. And, of course, Joe's already got a head start on 2024 movies. I'm behind. I got to get caught up.
I'm ahead of you. So,
yeah. Yeah, I haven't I haven't watched a single 2024 movie yet. So, yeah.
Slacker.
I'm telling you, watch at least The Human Trap.
I have it written down.
The South Korean one. Yeah. Yeah, that one.
And then the other one, you said there was another
Laced.
One.
Laced was pretty good, too. Yeah. Yeah. Laced.
So.
Yeah. So we got a lot of time left in the year.
Oh, but yeah. There's plenty of time to get caught up for sure. Yeah. Yeah. So I guess that's it for this time. And we any announcements? Anything we need to touch on? Nothing?
No.
All right. Well, go to www.cinescarehorror.com and check out our merchandise. It's sitting there waiting for you, and it goes to a good cause, the running of this show. So anyway, we will see you next time.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Alive. Um, 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 um. Sorry, guys. Sorry for that one.